Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the iPhone Podcast. Today we have episode 17. The iPhone Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Blue Microphone. I'm your host, Gary Ng from iPhoneinCanada.ca, and I'm here alongside our other host, Justin Louis. How's it going, Justin?
Very good. Excited for another episode, so let's go.
All right, let's cover some of the stories that we found were really, really interesting. Up first is there's a rumor that Apple is pursuing an iTunes music subscription model. There's been consistent stories and rumors about how iTunes is going to be moving to the cloud. These stories keep on coming up. I think it's going to happen eventually. It's just a matter of time. But I think, you know, the all-you-can-eat models, people love that. And if that was available, people would definitely jump on that.
Well, people do like it, but none of them have been super successful because they've been hard to manage. There's been limited selection. The price isn't always great. So I think if Apple could bring the current catalog they have, which is the best there is as far as digital music, if they could bring all of that into a subscription service, that would be great. The thing that I find that I'm skeptical about these stories is they always use Spotify as the example, saying, well, Apple's trying to block Spotify and maybe that's the hint of them doing it. Well, there's three or four music subscriptions in the App Store right now, so I don't see that Apple's blocking anyone. I think it's the record labels who are still skeptical of this. Unfortunately, these idiots, as we've discussed over and over on this, still long for the good old days. They're still trying to figure out a way to get people to spend $20 for an album and have millions of people do that. They don't realize that that ship has sailed and they should be taking it where they can get it, and people can still pirate pretty easily. But people have shown, like you said, with the success of some of these other services, that hey, if it's $10 or $15 a month and it's all you can eat and I can easily manage it and use it on whatever device I have, I think it's going to be a big hit. So again, if Apple can make these deals and I can just have any music I want and kind of sync it to my iPhone, that's going to be a huge hit. And I know I would do it, and I think most people would.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, the selection and the price has to be the perfect at the perfect price point. I mean, people aren't going to pay for a subscription model that's too expensive. But at the same time, you know, if people are going to stream music over the air, what this brings data usage into mind, and a 6 gigabyte data plan with daily music streaming could definitely lead to potential overruns in usage.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, again, where it's going to get interesting over the next several years, because the Rogers 6 gigs at $30 is a pretty good deal, but that 6 gigs kind of is overkill for most people right now. But if you start streaming Netflix over 3G and now you have a music subscription, it's going to get, those 6 gigs are going to go pretty fast. So hopefully the carriers will go along with it and not, again, just try to gouge you because they're missing out. They feel they're missing out on the revenue. So again, we're in early days for all of this stuff. So we'll just keep reporting on it here and discussing it and see where it all works out to be.
Yeah. All right. There's another story here. It talks about how Apple has actually been awarded a patent to control the sending or receiving of text messages that contain quote-unquote objectionable content. The purpose of this is to target students such as tweens and teenagers who are still in high school regarding the quote-unquote sexting that seems to be going on. This would allow parents to, you know, put in some parental controls, and it basically will, the feature will take out certain keywords and basically make it safe for you know, children to use their phones. I think, you know, this is good to protect children, but at the same time, I think there's going to be ways to circumvent this. Children and teenagers, they don't like to have anything sort of filtered. They want to be able to talk to their friends in the language that they're going to use.
Yeah, I mean, this story is interesting because, A, I'm always fascinated by the reporting, the media outlets always want to jump on this as some kind of Big Brother story where Apple is out to stop everyone from doing something. It was just like that patent about them being able to turn on the camera to find a stolen phone, and next thing you know, everybody's running with this story that Apple's going to attack jailbreakers, and if you do something with your phone they don't want, they're going to shut you down. Again, it's just a patent. You never know if these things are ever going to come out, and I think it's a good idea to keep making these kind of parental controls better and easier for parents who want to have it. You're right, the teens or the kids don't necessarily want it, but if you're a parent and you have the choice between buying one of two products, Apple's smart to make these available for certain parents, and it's a tough decision for parents right now. I know I have friends who kind of look to me because I'm so familiar with the internet to kind of get my opinion on what their kids should be doing online, and I always have trouble even articulating it, because I say to them at one point, if I had a kid at a certain age, I'd be pretty damn scared of them using Twitter and Facebook and some of the stuff that could happen and some of the personal information that could get out there. But at the same time, these are important tools that are going to help them get jobs and help them to be able to create content and better their lives. So it's like anything, you got to try to find that balance. And if something like this helps certain parents deal with it, then I'm all for it.
Completely agree. Here we go. Last week we talked about how there was a Wall Street Journal report of Verizon coming out with the iPhone for next year. About a day after that, we received another confirmation about this story, but this time from the New York Times. So two major media outlets reporting that Verizon is getting the iPhone. I think this is going to be inevitable. It's going to come. Apple is going to either come out with a separate device that has CDMA built in and is just strictly CDMA, or they're going to add a CDMA band to existing GSM phones to make it dual purpose. What do you think? What do you think Apple's going to do?
I think what you just said is going to happen. I mean, none of this is for sure, and I mean, you really do have to take every one of these rumors with a grain of salt, because we have been hearing about a Verizon iPhone for 2 years, but the fact that now all these kind of rumors are starting to make sense together, there was reports this week that there's several big carriers, including one in India, that's looking for a CDMA iPhone. There was a report, I believe was in TechCrunch this week, that Apple definitely won't, the iPhone 5 won't be a 4G device, that they want better penetration. So I think there's a pretty good chance you're going to see a CDMA iPhone for Verizon early next year. And then the other rumor is that the iPhone 5, when it launches in June or July, will be a dual band phone. And to me, that makes sense for Apple. Then you're kind of open to all the carriers, and why go to 4G when such a small part of the overall coverage overall in the world isn't really up to speed yet. So to me, it makes sense. So I guess, again, we'll keep reporting this rumor every single week, because there'll inevitably be some kind of little update every week. But I think we're getting very close.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the States. I mean, they only have AT&T selling the iPhone. We're lucky in Canada to have multiple carriers sell the iPhone. So I think a lot of people are looking forward to being able to try another network. Here we have another story. It talks about how 1 in 5 Americans make video calls with the new FaceTime feature that's out, which is also now available on the 4th generation iPod Touch. People are able to make FaceTime calls all the time, anywhere, except FaceTime is limited to Wi-Fi only. However, if you have been listening to the iPhone podcast, we talked about one of the latest 3G video calling apps, Tango, which has allowed people to make video calls over 3G. Now, 1 in 5 Americans make video calls. I mean, I have FaceTime on my phone. I can't remember the last time I used FaceTime. I think it was probably a week ago to talk to some family that was, you know, not in the city. How about yourself?
Well, the reason I put the story in was because it's not really an iPhone story. It's they make video calls 1 in 5 in some format. But again, I think the press went so crazy with, oh, this is just a gimmick feature, nobody's going to use it. I never looked at FaceTime, and I still don't, as something that, oh, I can't wait till every person I know has a video capable phone, so I video chat or whatever you want to call it every time, but it does come in handy certain times, and I don't use it that often. Like I said, I probably used it sometime last week or a few weeks ago. It's something that I've maybe only used a handful of times, but it's a nice feature to have. And I know lots of other people who think it's a neat feature, but like when we were showing it off on Thanksgiving, because several of my family members have iPhone 4, some don't, everybody was kind of fascinated by it, but a lot of them had other phones or other things that they don't all interconnect. So again, if you saw Skype talking about eventually implementing this kind of technology into their app, if you can get where more and more people have it, I do think it's going to continue to grow. Is it going to replace calling? No, of course not, because you don't want to be holding up a phone to your face. And like you've mentioned before, you don't want to be worried about how you're dressed or if you combed your hair or not. But it's still a nice feature to have. I love on the iPhone that you can use front and back camera. I've actually almost used it more for somebody to show me something. I even helped somebody do something on their computer the other day where they were showing me their screen and I was telling them what to do. So again, it's a nice feature. I don't think it was ever intended to replace audio calling, but it's nice. And as more and more of these phones and computers are able to do it, if it's built into OS X in the right onto the Mac soon, that's a good thing. And again, that's what I find interesting. It's going to be a bigger feature than they were originally saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to get the reason right now that FaceTime isn't as prevalent as it should be is because it's limited to the number of devices that are out there. Obviously, if you don't have any friends or family that are using iPhone 4s, then you can't test out the device or the feature rather. But this is why I think with Apple's upcoming Back to the Mac event, which is slated for October 20th, this is when I think Apple will introduce FaceTime right to the Mac, like integration with iChat. I feel that this is the perfect time to do this. It has to happen. I mean, we've seen apps such as the Yahoo Messenger app, which we talked about, that will allow video calling from your iPhone to a PC.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of having as many devices supported as possible and the ease of use and the quality. For years, I mean, video calling or video chatting, at least on the computer, has been around forever. I can remember years ago trying to set up video calls with friends in other cities, and it wouldn't work, or it'd be blocking out, or they would say you got to open this port on your router, and it was so much more complicated and the quality was so suspect. But now FaceTime, boom, press one button and the quality, whenever I have used it, it's been excellent. If you use the video chat through iChat or the screen sharing for iChat, again, just flawless. Now I can't remember the last time somebody said, oh, it can't connect or there'd be some issue with that. So again, as more devices support it, and if it keeps getting this easy and that good of quality, I think you're going to just see the use go up and up and up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, like you said before, with video chat, it was very, very difficult to get it working. You'd have to plug in a webcam, install drivers, do all that stuff. But now it's just so seamless. It's integrated. And to be able to call someone, you know, just having the same way of making calls from, you know, your cell phone, your iPhone 4 to the Mac, I'm pretty sure it's going to come. Don't hold me on it, but I would introduce that. But let's talk more about this Back to the Mac event. Obviously, it's going to be focused on what's going on with the Mac. Rumors are that, you know, 10.7 will be released, maybe a new MacBook Air, obviously a refresh to the Mac lineup. People have also talked about a touchscreen Mac device of some sort. What will this be called? Will it be called OS X Lion, Liger, Leo? What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I sure like the chances of it being called Lion because of the little picture they sent out. I honestly don't know what to predict. I mean, I think this event has caught most people by surprise. It has. It's the only event I can remember where Apple just sent out the invitation and then everybody reported it. Normally you start getting reports weeks in advance saying, oh, Apple's set to announce this date. So this has totally come out of nowhere. I kind of have a feeling that it's going to be similar to what they usually do at WWDC. I don't think you'll necessarily see a ton of new hardware announced, but I do think they're going to talk about the next version of OS X, and I think you'll see it being tighter, the integration between the mobile operating system and the desktop. I think you're going to see those lines blurred even more. There's going to be a lot of features from the mobile introduced into the desktop, the ability to share in between them easier. And again, I think it's going to reassure people that, hey, iOS isn't replacing the desktop thing, which is what some people were worried about. But I don't think we'll see a touchscreen Mac yet. I don't think they're quite there, but I'm interested to see what they have, because as much as I love iOS, I don't think it's quite ready for full desktop use, so I'm glad to see that the Mac is no longer going to be taking a back seat. I think that's what most of it's going to be about, is reassuring Mac community and the Mac developers that, hey, we're still here and here's what we're working on.
Yeah, I mean, people are also predicting that Apple might come out with something just completely new. Steve Jobs might introduce a new way of how we're going to use our computers for the future. But what will be interesting is if they do decide to live stream the event, like the last iPod event, which actually was really great live.
It was. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I hope it was really good. Any iOS device, Safari, browsers, it worked out really well for them. Let's talk about the iPad. We haven't talked about the iPad a lot. Good old Walmart. 24-hour Walmarts are the best. Super centers. Walmart is preparing to offer the iPad along with Verizon now. So I think Target is already selling the iPad. Now you have Walmart. And now Verizon, the carrier, is going to sell the iPad. Apple is basically hitting up every single store any single store that wants to sell the iPad. It seems like they're going to. They want to get the iPad into as many hands as they can.
Yeah, I think this is a great story. I mean, I like that Verizon's carrying it. I think that does lead a little bit, lead some credence to the rumors of the iPhone coming there. And I think Apple has never been this aggressive with the product when it comes to getting it in this many retail outlets. They've been in other retail outlets, but the kind of the Apple Store online and the Apple stores have kind of been the focus, and then they've had really kind of tight control. Best Buy, where they have certain parts of the store sanctioned off. Targets now have it, and they don't really even have a special section for it, so they're letting the retailers kind of go with it. And I think it's because they've just realized that this is far more of a mainstream product than they ever have. So I think they're taking their shot at selling a ton of these at Christmas time. This has already been a great seller all year, and now coming into the holiday season, I think it's at that price point that it can be a pretty incredible product. And for years, Apple investors and Apple pundits have kind of said, hey, Apple, where's your cheap product? Where's your Walmart product? Can you imagine how well you'd sell if you had this cheaper product? And Steve Jobs has always said, no, we're Apple because of the higher end products. We don't want to dilute our brand by having some low budget netbook. But I think they finally realized that, hey, the iPad, great quality product, but that price point and interest level of people, this could be sort of our first kind of mainstream computer product. So they're certainly going for it, and we'll see what the results are.
Yeah. The iPad is definitely, changed the game of the quote unquote tablet market. In respect to netbook sales, we've always talked about how the iPad has affected the netbook and, you know, what people are wanting to buy. This next story talks about how Apple is the third largest PC vendor now in the U.S. Basically, Mac sales have increased, and people are saying if you do include the iPad, it actually makes Apple's growth seem even more significant.
Yeah, I mean, if you combine the two products, then they're probably number one, and it's incredible. But even not adding in the iPad, this article puts them at third with 10%, over 10% of the market, which I'm pretty sure is, if it's not the high watermark for Apple, it's close, and it's definitely the highest it's been in a lot of years. And like we spoke a few weeks ago on the podcast, Apple excels by having 3 or 4% of the market, again, because they sell a higher end product, they have better margins, they're going for that more elite kind of purchase. If they can start getting these kind of numbers while still having those margins, that's why their stock is over 300. That's why they're rotating between the first and second and third largest company in the US and all these different things. They're having huge success by kind of being able to have it both ways. Huge margins on these type of products, and then now starting to sell huge numbers.
Yeah, there is this blog post on asimco.com where the author here, Horace, he talks about how as a media tablet, you know, the iPad deserves to be ignored in PC rankings. He's basically comparing how if you include the iPad, like we just said, PC unit shares just totally decrease and Apple's share increases. Looking at growth rates with and without the iPad, it's saying that Apple has growth rates of possibly, I don't know, it was high percentages, looking at almost 100% here according to this graph. So it'll be interesting to see what Apple will present when they have their earnings call on October 18th. People have been talking about a $20 billion quarter. Apple still does have about $50 billion cash in the bank, so things are going really well. Their stock price actually broke $300, I believe that was yesterday, on the 13th. So once again, I mean, this company is just going full throttle right now.
The other thing I find a little bit interesting about that story is if you think of it this way, the Mac is having the best success, like I said, either that it's ever had or it's certainly it's having the best success it's had over the last 5 or 6 years. And that comes in a time period where, again, a lot of the Apple commenters and bloggers and pundits have said, hey, they've basically ignored the Mac product for iPhone. So it's not bad to have your best sales ever when you're supposedly ignoring it and not really innovating. That just goes to show you that halo effect of satisfied iPhone and iPad users, how that can still sell the Apple product. So now if Apple starts to put a focus back on the Mac, I think we could be in for a period where they start to become, they threaten to be that 20-30% of the market. I always use my family as a little bit of a story. When the iPhone launched, I was the only Apple user. Nobody even was really that into the iPods or anything. There might have been a couple iPods floating around the family. Now 6 or 7 people have iPhones, and my cousin just got her MacBook Pro, which makes about the 5th or 6th MacBook Pro that's been bought in the last 6 months at my family. So again, these people get introduced to Apple through the iPhone and then realize, wow, this is a great product. And if I had the Apple computer, it would integrate better. And the reliability of my phone and must be the same with the computer. It's Apple's really positioning themselves well to kind of become the computer company for these type of things where people say, hey, I want to be part of the whole Apple experience.
Yeah, I think at the same time, we can also thank PC manufacturers and Microsoft for sort of sitting back, and they were just, you know, sitting on their success of earlier versions of Windows. And that has actually led to people considering another operating system. We all remember how Windows Vista was one of the, you could call it one of the biggest flops of all time. A lot of people did not want to buy systems with Windows Vista. They wanted to just stay on using Windows XP. Now, for myself, I was previously a Windows user, and what made me switch to a Mac was just the ease of use and knowing that, you know, your computer is going to work, less time troubleshooting and just more time getting stuff done. But yeah, it really does take someone needs to be pushed over the edge to cause them to really say, you know what, I'm fed up. I'm no longer going to deal with formatting my computer or defragging it or whatever you may have. I'm going to go buy a Mac and be done with it.
And like you said, it's that getting fed up or whatever pushes you over the edge. And then, like, you know, and as the saying goes, once you go Mac, you never go back. I mean, it's goofy, but it's true. You realize I haven't been a lifelong Mac user. I had a Mac years and years ago, but I found back in those days, there was just a lack of software at one point. There was a lot of things that I needed to do and there wasn't the programs available for it. Then that kind of switched now. Now I find there's an app for everything on a Mac, and sometimes there's nothing even available for the PC or it's not near as good. And then, like you said, build in all that reliability. You get what you pay for. I know it's the price that hangs most people up, and what the reason everyone in my family switching over is I've now convinced them, yes, you're going to pay double for that laptop, but it's still going to be working in 3 or 4 years. And then when you sell it used, you're going to get a nice chunk of your money back. Whereas a PC, A, you have to deal with Windows, which I don't like to begin with, but if you buy some Dell laptop, it's going to start having problems within months. That's that first jump. And again, that's why I think the iPod and the iPhone and the iPad ease that thing. It gets people into that ecosystem and understanding it, and they fall in love with that product, and then they say, oh yeah, I gotta try out the Mac computer now.
Yeah, that's what people are calling the halo effect, buying an iPad or buying an iPhone and then strongly considering something else. Last week, one of the big announcements that came from the iPod event was the Apple TV. So I actually ordered an Apple TV and it arrived today. I got it set up. I'd like to talk about my experience with the Apple TV. First things right off the bat, I noticed that the box is incredibly small. I thought the box that was handed over to me from FedEx was the wrong package because it was just that small. The unit itself is very tiny. I know people have talked about it on the net saying it's really, really small. It's a lot smaller than you think it is. Getting it set up is a breeze. Power cable, HDMI cable. I just turned the TV on and right away it just asked me to select my language. I connected it to my network. I immediately downloaded the remote app, which has been updated to work with the Apple TV. I set that up to my Apple TV through home sharing, and immediately your iPad screen becomes a touch screen to navigate the Apple TV, which is really nice. Typing, if you need to type something, you can now type it on your iPad or your iPhone, and you don't need to use the controller to go left and right, up and down. Netflix, Justin, I know you love Netflix, but Netflix actually looks amazing on the Apple TV. I was really impressed with the 720p streaming of Mad Men on Netflix. But I mean, I've still, I'm waiting for 4.2 so I can test out AirPlay. But so far it's been a really neat device to watch movie trailers, YouTube, play music from our computers. There's internet radio, all those radio stations that you can play in iTunes. It's right there on the Apple TV as well.
And don't forget podcasts. People can listen to the iPhone podcast on their Apple
That's
TV.
That's right. I did search for the iPhone podcast. I did press play, and it sounded just as amazing as it would on your computer. The remote is really nice. Aluminum remote. I haven't done a full test of the device, but I'd like to wait until 4.2 comes out, and then you can get the real power of testing out AirPlay. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, as we said before, I think it's a pretty impressive product for the price. Right out of the gate, it's a pretty great product, and I think it's only going to get better over time. Like you said, in November when they launch AirPlay, that's going to be good. Now that we know that there's 8 gigs of storage on board and the ability to install apps, I think it's only a matter of time till you start getting other things like Hulu and CBS. Again, might not get those in Canada. The Apple TV experience will probably never be as good here in Canada as it is elsewhere, but hopefully Netflix. I don't think they've announced anything about subscriber numbers or anything in Canada yet, but I'm really enjoying the service, and I know a lot of people are, so I hope it's a huge hit and the rest of these companies start to clue in, and maybe someday they'll figure out that it's not a coincidence that Canada has some of the highest piracy rates in the world. That's because we can't get half this stuff legitimately if we wanted to. So that's always my excuse when people say, oh, look at Canada, just a bunch of pirates. Well, we either pirate it or we don't get to see it. Half the stuff isn't even available here. So send it our way for a reasonable price and Netflix is going to prove that we'll buy it, and things like the Apple TV will make it easy to converge all these different services onto your TV, and I can't wait to try it. Unfortunately, right now, my entertainment system is set up. I watch everything on my MacBook or my iMac. I don't even have a TV set up right now, so I decided not to waste my money on an Apple TV with having nothing to hook it up to. But once I decide to set up a TV again, I will definitely be getting one.
Yeah, I think one aspect of the Apple TV that people haven't really been discussing is how AirPlay is going to be a huge hit, not only with consumers, but with businesses. I mean, think about this. Instead of buying a projector or device to hook up to a TV, you can now spend $99 US or $119 Canadian, buy an Apple TV, and basically use AirPlay to share any sort of presentation to a TV. Let's say you're at some sort of convention, you can hook up your Apple TV and immediately share your display right to the TV through your iPad, from your iPad to the Apple TV to the TV display. I mean, the possibilities are endless, and we know that there's going to be a plethora of other apps that will utilize AirPlay. I think this is just the beginning.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's it's a small history, but there's a couple year history of iOS products where Apple announces some type of feature or some type of API, and it's cool right out of the box, but then the developers just take it and then run with it to stuff you didn't even imagine. I'm still convinced that even the jailbreak community early on put ideas in Apple's head that they probably couldn't even imagine when there was no App Store and what these guys were coming out with. So again, you're kind of always, I'm constantly blown away by some of the quality and the type of products I have now on my iPhone. And then when you think about it, we're really only a couple years into this. The possibilities are endless. Like you said, I can't wait to see what smart developers are going to do with this AirPlay as it comes out.
Right on. Yeah, it's I'm really looking forward to AirPlay. I think it's going to be great for people who want to share photos from their iPhone straight to the TV. Just imagine one tap, boom, your photos and videos are playing right on the TV. No more cable hookups, no more yanking out USB drives or pulling out SD cards into your Wii, etc. Yuck. All gone.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on to the app section of the iPhone podcast. One of the most amazing games that I played is in the number one spot right now. It's called Cut the Rope. This is a very fun and very innovative game. I did see it there in the top spot for a while now. I didn't test it out until today, but now I understand why this game has such incredibly high ratings. It's because the premise of the game is very simple. You need to get candy into the mouth of this little monster, and in order to do it, you need to use your finger to slice ropes, to kind of cut them, and depending on which rope you slice, the candy will drop and swing at a different rate and whatnot. It's really fun. It's really simple. I thought it was a great game, and I'm looking forward to playing it. It's not hard, but it is challenging. It's almost like an Angry Birds, but completely different. It's fun and light, and it's easy.
And it's 99 cents, and there is a free version, so people should try it. I haven't tried it yet. It's funny. I have never in my life been into these kind of casual games, but again, with the aggressive price structure that we've seen work for things like Angry Birds, I have tried them. I resisted the whole cult of Angry Birds for a long time, but even I use it now. I don't play it a ton like other people, but it is a fun game, and again, how can you go wrong for 99 cents?
Yeah, I mean, I can only think back to the days of buying a Nintendo cartridge for $50, and now you can buy a game that developers have worked on for months and months and months, and you can get it for 99 cents or even free. It's really a dog-eat-dog world out there in the App Store ecosystem.
But again, the thing I like about it is there was almost this perception at one point that, oh, this isn't going to be a sustainable model. Everything's driven down to that 99 cents. But the numbers are so huge that these companies, like, look at the developers of Angry Birds. They're talking about putting film deals together. They've sold millions and millions of copies of these. So, and like I said, you know the model's working when you constantly see the Segas of the world, the EA Sports of the world, experimenting. I mean, almost all the EA games every couple of weeks go down to 99 cents, and then you see them instantly go right to the top of the charts. When those companies are realizing, hey, this is how it's done, to me, it shows the power of the store, the proof in the pudding finally, that yes, if you charge reasonable prices, piracy isn't an issue, people will buy these. And I hope we start to see this leak over into the other video game worlds where they realize, hey, maybe we don't need to charge $65 for the latest version of Madden on the 360. If we sold them for $19.99, maybe we'd sell 10 times more and make the money that way.
Yeah, pricing structure is very important. Another app that we've been talking about from last time was the Yahoo Messenger app. This allows live video chat from your iPhone to a PC or Mac that is running Yahoo Messenger. So I think that's really neat. That's almost like what we're talking about with the Mac event happening on the 20th and the implementation of FaceTime with iChat.
Yeah, the holy grail for this whole environment is when an app like Meebo will work on all the formats. So you can put any credentials that you have. If you're a Facebook, if you're a user, you're a Gtalk user, you're a Hotmail, whatever when you originally got signed up with or whatever, when they all support all the different protocols and you just hit launch one app and you can talk to all your different friends in one app and all support the video, that's kind of where we need to get to. But again, each time somebody adds one of these features, it just gets us closer to that point. So like you and I mentioned before, neither of us happen to be a Yahoo Messenger user, but if you are, get the app. It sounds like it works well, and that's good to have.
Yeah, definitely interesting for those who do still use Yahoo Messenger. I haven't touched that ever. Moving on, here's one neat app that was updated. The Google mobile app has been updated with Google Goggles, which is basically Google's way of doing search by taking a picture with your camera. I've tested it out by taking pictures of text and other sort of, images, and it's been really successful and also at the same time really creepy.
Neat. And the other thing I'll mention is it, and a poor guy just happened to bring it out the same day Google did theirs. Delicious Monster, who does Delicious Library on the Mac, which is a great program for people who've ever needed to sort and maintain a database for DVDs and CDs and books. There's a thing in the Mac community known as the Delicious Generation, and that was one of the first apps to really go for that kind of beautiful, smooth look. He has released a Google Goggles app called Noggles. It's a free app that just takes a different, kind of a simpler, prettier approach to Google Goggles, so you can check that out. And it really is neat. You can take pictures of literally anything, and it does a Google search, and I did all kinds of things, all kinds of different movies, video games, computer products, and it was finding everything. The weirdest one that I took a picture of and it couldn't find was my old Mighty Mouse, my Mac Mighty Mouse. I took a picture of it several different times and it wouldn't come up with any results, which I thought was a weird thing for it to get hung up on. But everything else I tried, it worked really well.
The Goggles is great. It's a great way to search quickly. I can't wait to try it out when I'm out and about, downtown or just around, but it's one of those apps that's now really, really cool to show your friends. I know Android users have had Google Goggles for a while now, so it's great that iPhone users get to play as well. Next up, there is a new app that was released, the Posterous iPhone app. I know you're a big fan of Posterous. Maybe you can tell us a bit about your experiences with this app, Justin.
Yeah, if for some reason you're not familiar with these guys, you definitely want to download the app. It's free. Set up a Posterous account. And the one thing I'll point out is I watched the official video the other day, and the company is called Posterous. It should be Posterous. Posterous, you're making Posterous sounds better, but for some reason it's called Posterous. So don't think I'm nuts while I'm saying that. I hate even saying it, but I've now heard from several of the people within the company that it's definitely preposterous. But anyways, they're kind of a blogging system similar to Tumblr. And again, you will never find a web site or an iPhone app that's easier to use. Set up a free account. You can upload pictures, do text. It's one of its biggest key features is it allows you to auto-post to other services. So if you want, you can set up a preposterous blog, put in your Twitter account, put in your Facebook account, put in your Flickr account, and one post to them, it goes out to these other services. If you're someone who likes to share a lot of photos and videos, I recommend using that because then you always have a record of all that. If you're used to sharing pictures on Twitter and you're using different clients and some are using TwitPic and some are using different services, some of those things go out of business. You use preposterous. It's all in one place. It gives you an easy thing to like keep all your memories and for other people to check out. So again, if you're interested in blogging, I would definitely check out preposterous. It's a great service. And like I said, there's so many features. You can add your own custom domains. It's a viable product. Anything from running just a simple little blog to share some of your pictures and things you come across on the internet to actually running like a full website for your company. It's a very powerful service, and their iPhone app is excellent.
Yeah, I've used the service myself for longer extended posts on Twitter on my iPhone. It's a really neat service for basically starting a blog within minutes. And like you said, you can get your own custom domain and implement it that way. Setting up a website nowadays is just getting easier and easier. Anyone can set one up.
And the other thing I should mention that they were kind of one of the first to really perfect and now everybody else has copied them is you don't even have to use the iPhone app if you don't want. You can actually just email a picture to them or a thing of text and it will automatically get posted to your site. And again, if you have auto post set up, it will automatically store that on your Flickr or Twitter, whatever you want to do. So again, if you have any interest in any of this stuff, you should definitely check it out.
That's right. And the last app that we're going to talk about today on the iPhone podcast is an app for the iPad. It's TED Talks. For those who aren't familiar with TED, basically they are talks with some of the most brightest and interesting people that we have on the planet. People that are influential in technology, in the arts, music, the sciences. They give really, really interesting talks that are completely free. TED is a nonprofit, and they've just come out with a really neat and simple and elegant iPad app. I've tested it out. It's really easy to use. You can sort videos by category, by most viewed, by most recent. And it's one of those apps that you just have to download and maybe spend an hour or two watching some videos. It's really, really neat.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with the TED conference, definitely check it out. It's everything from like J.J. Abrams did a talk a few years ago to Bill Gates. It's, again, the best and brightest from all different industries and on all kinds of different topics. But again, they put on these amazing conferences that I think a ticket is somewhere in the name of in the ballpark of 10 grand to go, but they make all their videos available for free, and now you can use it on your iPad and your iPhone, so it's definitely worth checking out.
Right, that's pretty much it for this episode of the iPhone podcast, episode 17. Justin, any other last words out there?
Yeah, I'll just quickly, because we got a couple minutes here, and we haven't been doing as many app recommendations lately, so I have a couple quick things people might want to check out. I have a new Twitter client. There's a new Twitter. I don't think it's new, but new to me. There's a Twitter client out there called Icebird. And I tried it last week. And within 2 minutes of loading my Twitter on, it's now become my main Twitter app. It's absolutely gorgeous, which is weird saying it from Twitter. I actually think it's a better looking, smoother. All the graphics seem to even be better upgraded for Retina than the Twitter or SimpliTweet. Everything just looks so smooth and polished. And it also, it's kind of claim to fame, or what they're trying to do is say, hey, everything that Twitter offers within a couple clicks, which is interesting. For instance, when you're on your timeline on this app, You just have nothing but your timeline. You can't, there's no little tabs at the bottom for direct messages or at replies. So say if you're comparing it to Twitter, the official Twitter app, the at replies are one tap away. On this app, the at replies are two taps away. But then again, this thing has this main central home screen where everything's two taps away. So as something, like I said, with the Twitter, you might be able to get to your at replies in one step. But if you've ever tried to dig into your options, you're five or six taps away. This has, again, it's a different approach. It kind of has this main menu first, and then you go to your timeline. But like I said, it just looks a lot nicer. It seems I don't know, I just like the feel of it. But then the two features that make it absolutely killer for me is it never screws up remembering where you are. The fast app switching, even if you haven't gone on in days, it always remembers the exact tweet you were on. And the feature that I love about it, that Simply Tweet and Twitter both have screwed up somehow, is if you've ever noticed when you log in to Twitter or Simply Tweet and you go into your timeline and you haven't been on in several hours or several days, there's always that little kind of ripped paper look that's showing you, hey, there's missing stuff in there. Well, in Twitter, if you click that, it fills in that missing gap, but then it scrolls you to the top. So you actually have to screw around scrolling back to try to see where you were. This app, just right where you left off, the new ones all go above it. You never lose track of where you are. And if you've been away for days and days and you don't care about all the stuff, just again, like all the other ones, you just do a quick tap at the top, scrolls right back up. So if you're looking for a new Twitter client, Icebird, I absolutely love.
I'm going to definitely have to check that out. That sounds really neat.
And the other neat little feature is right on the main screen, there's a what looks like a drawer icon that's right at the top, and that's all your drafts. So if you're someone who likes to be working on a message and then you want to send it at a certain time of day, or it's not ready to be sent, or for whatever reason you just don't want to use it. The other thing they claim in their literature is that they do the best job of working offline, storing different things so you can access it even if you don't have an internet connection. But I haven't had to use that feature because I have the 6 gigs on Rogers. There's just never a time that I don't have data. So again, if you're looking for a Twitter client, I think this is compelling enough difference to try over the Twitter app. And it kind of brings us back to what we said when the Twitter app first got announced, that it definitely doesn't kill this market because other people can come up with new and innovative ways of doing it. And this is one that I really happen to like. The one other app I'll just mention quickly is there's a new free app called This Week In, and it's the official app for the This Week In network. And they do a bunch of video podcasts on everything from the iPad to poker to movies to the TV show Mad Men. It's a great app. You can access all their different shows. And the nice feature that I like is if you're watching a video and then you leave the app, it remembers where you left off. You can favorite episodes, so you can make a little playlist. So again, if you like this show, you like podcasts, you like watching shows about technology, check it out. It's free, and they have a lot of great content, so you might as well have it on your phone. So when you're sitting stuck somewhere in a line at a bank or somewhere where you weren't expecting to have a little downtime, there's a quick and easy show just to be able to find right on your iPhone without having to download it or subscribe or anything. So check that out as well. It's a great app.
Awesome. That's great. I strongly encourage everyone to continue to rate our podcast in iTunes. You can also send us feedback. I am located at iPhoneinCanada.ca, Gary at iPhoneinCanada.ca, or twitter.com/iPhoneinCanada. Justin, you can be located at twitter.com/JustinLuey. That's Luey.
Correct. And Justin@theiPhonePodcast is my email. Feel free to email me any questions, comments, feedback of any type. I appreciate it. And thanks again, everybody.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to episode 17 of the iPhone Podcast. We will see you next week.